Welcome back to another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell, and today I'll be joined by CBS's Will Brinson to break down the AFC offseasons and what each team in the AFC might have left missing on their roster, plus the signing of one Tim Tebow. But before I get into that and into today's show, I wanted to quickly tell you about another ESPN podcast you may have heard of before. It's The Right Time with Bomani Jones, hosted, of course, by the excellent Bomani Jones. Guys, this podcast has everything you're looking for: hot takes, meaningful discussion, and great guests, including our friend Dominique Foxworth. And if you're like me, once a week isn't enough. Bomani has added a third show. Three times a week, you can listen to The Right Time with Bomani Jones. So make sure you're listening, make sure you're downloading and following The Right Time with Bomani Jones wherever you get your podcasts. And without further ado, here's Will Brinson to talk about the AFC. All right, joining me now, as promised, here on the Bill Barnwell Show, a regular contributor to the podcast, a great friend of the show, a friend of mine, an excellent podcaster, a man who is the king of the emergency podcast. It's CBS's Will Brinson. Will, what's up?
Bill, what's going on, man? We made it through the draft. We now get the schedule later than ever, which is clearly by design. That's fine. Capture the American hearts and spirits with the release of games that we already knew would be played. And then we can saunter into the off season for what might be a quasi normal regular season, but I'm sure it will be quite insane as usual.
Well, just in case the schedule release coming up was not enough news for you, Will, we have breaking news as we start the podcast taping today. According to NFL Network's Ian Rapoport, the Jacksonville Jaguars are planning to sign quarterback turned tight end Tim Tebow to a 1-year deal, per Ian and Tom Pelissero. Nothing's done yet, but he will have a chance to make the team to reunite with his mentor and college head coach, Urban Meyer. We thought we were done with Tim Tebow a decade ago, and he somehow, you can't kill Tim Tebow. He's back. I don't get it. Like, is this just 4 clicks? Like, I don't like clickbait. This feels like clickbait to me.
Yeah, it's either clickbait or Urban is throwing his boy a bone. And there was nobody else left who would bring him to the NFL. Urban had used up all the other favors, you know, Belichick and Chip Kelly. And he said, you know what? Tebow's my guy. I'm going to throw him a bone. You know, fortunately for us, Bill, we're going to talk about, you know, AFC teams and gaping holes. The only thing I had left for the Jaguars was tight end.
I know.
And now, good to go. The Jaguars 2021 Super Bowl champions.
Okay. So let's be realistic here. What are the chances week one that Tim Tebow was on the active roster for the Jacksonville Jaguars? Give me a percentage.
I will say, and this is probably higher than what you would expect me to say, but I will say 33.3.
Wow. I was going to say 10. So you're correct. It was higher than me, but you're an optimistic man, I feel like.
Didn't see that coming. You know, I just feel like Urban Meyer is going to try and force this. Mm-hmm. And there's also the component too, where this benefits Shad Khan. I mean, you know, this team is in Jacksonville, and, you know, which is basically Gainesville, which is Florida Gators country. I mean, my grandfather is a huge Florida. They lived in Jacksonville, huge Gators guy and a huge Jaguars guy. So it should be, you know, if you can get Tebow involved and you can have Tebow be part of your team culture, which I think everyone would agree he's a good person, you know, that's a benefit. Maybe a little too rah-rah, but I can't imagine that a young team couldn't benefit from, you know, whatever culture he can bring and sort of translating Urban Meyer's system and Urban Meyer's approach to these younger players. And then if he happens to catch a touchdown pass from Trevor Lawrence in week one on a 1-yard little out route or something like that, you know, or a tight end stick or something like that, then Jaguars fans will go wild. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm definitely getting a text from my Aunt Susan about this. She's like, did you see we signed Tebow? And she's an FSU fan, so she doesn't care quite as much. But people down there will be, I think, kind of amped about it, even though from 30,000 feet, it feels like kind of a joke. I mean, not in a good way either.
Sure. But like, this is an impressive athlete. I don't think you can argue that Tim Tebow is not a really impressive athlete. Now, granted, that doesn't make him an NFL quarterback, but I mean, we've seen Taysom Hill succeed in New Orleans. I don't think Tim Tebow's game is all that much different from Taysom Hill. Granted, he's now playing tight end, which is not what Taysom Hill plays, but you know, it's such a, it would be an incredible accomplishment if he does pull it off. And I don't think it's going to matter all that much. I think he will probably not be able to pull it off. I mean, Logan Thomas has done this successfully, but it took him like 4 years to get there, you know, in a bunch of different teams to transition from being a quarterback at the college level and briefly at the NFL level to being an NFL tight end. But I mean, Tebow doesn't have much to lose. I mean, he's done with his baseball career, it seems like. I don't think
he has been catching balls for the past 10 years or
that's
whatever.
True. That's true.
You know, I mean, point. Smaller balls and hit, you know, not thrown by a human hand most of the time, I guess. But I mean, you know, I guess it kind of translates relative to something like bowling or something. I don't know.
We will find out. I think it would be cool to see Tim Tebow throw a touchdown pass on a trick play to Trevor Lawrence. But I understand if other people may not feel the same way.
I think Jaguars fans are down for it. So
yes,
and don't think that doesn't play a factor. Tim Tebow may have also gone to Urban and said, listen, I'm going to write the tell-all book about the 2004, the 2004, I guess, Jaguars. I mean, 2004 Gators, unless you give me a shot at a deal in training camp.
Unless you get me a training camp gig. That's fair. Then you know what? Tim Tebow should be playing all those cards. This is the time to try and blackmail former coaches, from what I understand. So as Will said, like we did last week in the NFC with Robert Mays, we're going to go team by team in the AFC here and talk about the holes that might be left on their roster after the end of free agency and, of course, after the end of the recent NFL draft. And we'll start in the AFC South because we just talked about the Jags. Tight end was going to be my selection as well. But then we move around this division. Let's talk about the Colts here, another team that had a gaping hole at one position, but then maybe on Monday seemed to fill that spot.
Yeah, when you asked me before the show, you said, did you hear about the breaking news? It's like, yes, of course, Bill. I saw that the Colts signed Eric Fisher. That was like, you know, 30 minutes ago or something. But that's what that was what I assumed you referred to, unless there was some catastrophic, rocket landing in the middle of the weekend somewhere, which I think several of my friends thought they saw. At any rate, when I look at the Colts, I think you could do the same thing with the Jaguars that you do with the Colts. Before this breaking news happened on Monday morning, you would have said tight end is the position with the Jaguars. I would have agreed. I still think it's the position because I don't think Tim Tebow necessarily fills it. And as for the Colts, left tackle was obviously the biggest hole on this roster. And while Eric Fisher fills it in name and in headline, he's coming off an Achilles injury, and I don't know that he necessarily can be guaranteed to fill it in terms of production, what they expected from him. I mean, this is a guy who was released by another AFC contender, the team that's been to the AFC championship game 3 straight years and the Super Bowl 2 straight years, and a team that got blasted in terms of its protection at the tackle positions during said Super Bowl. So if anyone, you know, to me, the idea that if the Chiefs don't think Eric Fisher can be back in time for the start of the season, and their moves suggest that they don't think that, then I still have questions about the position as it relates to the Colts.
Absolutely. And I mean, it'd be one thing if there was a very stable force at quarterback here, but with Carson Wentz, I think so much of what the Colts are going to have him do is sort of unlearn the bad habits we saw from him last year in Philadelphia. And now that he's in Indianapolis, the hope was, okay, better offensive line is going to protect him. He's going to get back to being the guy he was at the very least in 2018 and 2019. But you know, if the first month of the year has Sam Tevi at left tackle, that's not going to encourage Carson Wentz to get into good habits. And I think it's going to be tougher to sort of change those habits in the middle of a season once you get Eric Fisher on board. And if on top of that, that's assuming that Eric Fisher is still going to be the guy he was before the Achilles tear, which I hope he is. Obviously, he was a very talented left tackle before the injury, but that's a tough one. I mean, this is an injury he suffered in the AFC championship game. It's like he's had a full year to recover. He's going to be coming back after about 9 or 10 months. So, it's a step in the right direction, but I think I'd feel a lot better if they had signed Russell LeCun than if they had signed Eric Fisher, which is what they've done this morning.
Or, you know, even go out and sign, draft somebody, you know, or sign somebody. And they admitted that Chris Ballard said that they didn't feel as if, and Trent Williams is the other guy that they were in on, right? Yeah. So that would have been, if they had Trent Williams instead of Sam Tevi and Eric Fisher, you'd feel a lot better about it, clearly. Mm-hmm. Ballard said that there wasn't somebody when they were selecting that they believed was a top-end talent at left tackle. They ended up going to Quiddy Pay, the edge rusher. And that was another big need, too. I mean, edge rusher is certainly a problem for this team. So I don't begrudge him at all. And I think Chris Ballard, more than really most GMs out there, has been exceptionally smart and exceptionally good about balancing need versus, need versus value in the draft, mm-hmm. and at not chasing needs in free agency just because you have a bunch of money. That mm-hmm. that seems to be, he's very frugal and not in a cheap way. He's just not going to, well, this isn't working. Let's go spend $1 billion on this and hope it works mm-hmm. out. That's not how good teams operate. Now, we can certainly question the situation there at left tackle, and I think it's worth questioning. Mm-hmm. But I give them credit for sticking to their board in that case and not overdrafting somebody at left tackle that they didn't think would be the answer.
Yeah. And I mean, it's tough for them to also make a big trade where they move up because, didn't have their first round pick last year as part of the DeForest Buckner trade, lost a couple picks as part of the trade for Carson Wentz. So, I mean, those were moves they needed to make, and I think they'll be happy with Carson Wentz. They're certainly happy with DeForest Buckner, but it's sort of whack-a-mole here where it's okay. What can we fill? What can't we fill? And Fisher's going to help, but I don't know that he's a permanent solution. You mentioned teams who operate the right way, operate the wrong way. Teams who maybe sell out to try and fill a hole on their roster. Well, that described the Bill O'Brien Houston Texans. Bill O'Brien is gone. It's Nick Caserio running things now. They signed about 8 million players this offseason, but is there a spot on their roster you didn't think they appropriately addressed?
Oh, I just wrote, so I went through and wrote down what I thought was the biggest hole for every single team.
That's fine.
Colts was left tackle, is still left tackle.
Yes.
Texans, I wrote, yes. There are holes everywhere here. Yeah, I guess you could say that Laremy Tunsil is not a hole. I mean, they've pumped a ton of resources into the offensive line. Max Sharping, a second round pick in 2019, Titus Howard, a first round pick in 2019, yep. Laremy Tunsil, a first round pick in 2020, 2021, 2022. And, if Deshaun Watson is back on the field, then the quarterback situation is not a problem. Sure. I think running back, they have, oh my goodness, what a 2014 fantasy football team this would be with David Johnson, Mark Ingram, and Philip Lindsay. Mm-hmm. I don't think the wide receiver, I think wide receivers are a problem.
Yep.
And I think pretty much everything on defense is a problem.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I had defensive line here as the biggest weakness. They've added guys like Derek Rivers this offseason, but still, I mean, Emily Collins, but this is still a major work in progress. I mean, Ross Blacklock was not exactly impressive during his rookie season. They lose J.J. Watt, of course. I think that they're sort of locked into some pieces they probably don't want. And I'm not going to fault them too much for that because they're already stuck with those moves from the O'Brien era. Like, I don't think they probably want to have Randall Cobb at slot receiver, but you're kind of, the contract doesn't give you a choice. They made a lot of moves this year, I think, to improve their depth. I think they want to be a deep football team, but they definitely are lacking a lot of star power now. Like, they were 2 years ago, all stars and no depth. Now they're like no stars, all depth, but which is weird.
Right.
But like, definitely holes, I think, on the defensive line. I think at corner, even though they did have Terrence Mitchell and who else did they add this year? Terrence Mitchell and Desmond King. Both of whom are solid corners, but I think still questions at cornerback, questions at safety outside of Justin Reed. This is a team that is in transition. And
if this defense was top half of the league at the end of next season, then David Culley deserves coach of the year.
That's
or Lovie Smith. Lovie Smith deserves assistant of the year. Lovie also, one of the things that he said this offseason that I think is a big red flag was pointed out how at Illinois, when he was coaching there, you even tweeted this out. I
believe I did.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then I don't need to explain it to you, but I thought it was a very salient point because Lovie Smith's like, we can't play nickel. I mean, how are we going to play nickel? We just got to be in our base all the time. It should be fine going back to the NFL in 2021, Lovie, with a stripped down Texans defensive unit.
Yeah. I mean, coaches are smart. I don't want to just be like, oh, coaches are dumb and I'm a genius. I'm not. But it would seem like if you have a base defense and it's getting shredded by teams running out three wide receivers on you, one solution might be to take a defensive back off the bench and put him on the field and play nickel. But what do I know? I'm not an NFL coach.
By the way, this team, the Texans, their win total currently 4.5 under is juiced minus 135.
I would go over 4.5. I'm not going to lie.
But I've seen some places it's 3.5. 17 game season, Bill.
3.5 or 4.5.
17 game season with 9 home games. Yeah.
And it's a 4.5 over under. And they're expecting, I would go over too, because your bad teams win 5 games all the time by accident.
But. They do. But that's not going to be a fun 5 games to see them win.
Or like, you're sweating it, buddy.
You're every week. Doesn't matter what the score is. Yeah. You get to the fourth quarter, you're just like, oh no. Just holding on to the couch for dear life. I've had some of those over 3.5, over 4.5 bets where I have felt that way all year. And I felt that would be with the Texans, but I would probably take the over there if I had to pick a side. The best team in this division, maybe Tennessee, certainly changes here. A lot of moves on defense to try and refigure this defense. Of course, a couple of years ago, or last year, actually, I think they were the most expensive secondary in football. Now a lot of investment up front. But Will, did you feel like there was a spot that they still have as a whole on their roster after the offseason?
Yeah, I included pass rush on here, Bill, but I also think it's worth including wide receiver. Mm-hmm. AJ Brown is a top 10 wide receiver. I think that's easy to say. Yeah. I was going to say top 5, but that's probably a stretch. Mm-hmm. He's one of my 5 top favorite wide receivers in football. He's a beast. He's a CGAM, certified grown ass man. And I think he could see 200 targets this year, which would be wild. Around him, though, even at pass catcher, you don't even, you know, doesn't have to just be wide receiver. Mm-hmm. I mean, Anthony Firkser and Jeff Swaim at tight end, and then Josh Reynolds is going to be their number 2. That's a major red flag. If really anything happens to AJ Brown and he gets dinged up, and I don't think that'll happen, but goodness gracious, they are thin at wide receiver after him.
Yeah, I mean, I think really they're stars. Like, you lose AJ Brown, they have the worst wide receiver core in football. You lose Ryan Tannehill, they have Logan Woodside and DeShone Kizer at backup quarterback. You lose Derrick Henry, you're looking at Darrington Evans as your primary running back. I mean, it's just not a deep football team on offense. And if all your stars stay healthy, great. You're going to look really good. And they've been healthy mostly over the past couple of years, but it's just a very dangerous roster construction.
I mean, the more I look at it, the more I sort of wonder if the Jaguars aren't kind of live at 9-1 to win this division.
I will tell you, well, that they used to be like 13-1, and somebody was very interested in the Jaguars at 13-1 in the division. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I went on ESPN.com earlier this year and predicted that the Jacksonville Jaguars would win the AFC. So I think they are very live. I'm not saying they're going to win. I guess I did say they were going to win. So maybe I am saying they're going to win, but they're very least in the conversation there. This is I think a much more wide open division than people are giving it credit for right now.
There are very easy, darkest timelines that you can get down for both Tennessee and Indianapolis.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, you know, most of the time you're talking about a quarterback injury, of course, but just the, you know, an offensive line injury and, you know, AJ Brown, not, you know, dealing with what should be double teams almost every snap.
Yeah.
given the way this is set up and the pass rush not coming through and, you know, Caleb Farley. I mean, I don't know. It's not that hard to get there with this team. And of course, Indianapolis is banking almost entirely on, as we said, Carson Palmer operating behind, you know, Sam Tevy and Eric Fisher's his protection up there. It's not that crazy. I wouldn't want to back either the Colts or the Titans. I don't.
I just want to point out that you said Carson Palmer, and that is
Carson Palmer.
Oh. You said Carson Palmer, which I'm not sure if it's a compliment or an insult to Carson Wentz, but I feel
it's
like
an insult to Carson.
One or the other.
It's
That's fair.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Carson Palmer. I love you, Carson Palmer.
For Tennessee, I had kicker.
Oh,
these are two. They have Tucker McCann, who did not kick at all in 2020, and then Blake Hobiel, who was the Ohio State kicker, I want to say, last year. Tucker McCann hit 72% of his kicks at Missouri, which is a little scary for an NFL kicker. You know, this is a team that, granted,
real scary.
They got by with very inconsistent kicking last year from Steven Gostkowski, but I was shocked they did not have someone else with at least some NFL experience heading into camp. So we'll see. Maybe they'll add somebody. Certainly still some time there, but I think that was something that concerned me as a team that might be in a bunch of close games this year.
I'm just kind of worried about this team.
Yeah. But they might be fine.
Yeah. I mean, they've been 9-7 at least every single year that Mike Vrabel's been there. They're also they're turning over their coaching staff too. You know, new offensive coordinator with Arthur Smith gone. I think Shane Bowen is new DC. Was he there last year?
I believe he was.
Maybe he was there last year.
I don't remember. I'm trying to think. Was he on board last year? I'm looking it up. He was. No, he was the outside linebackers coach last year.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you're doing, and, you know, there's continuity there because all these guys were have been with Vrabel and know him. And I think Vrabel's an underrated head coach, but there's just some gaping holes here. The again, the wide receiver thing is concerning, and certainly on defense remains to be seen if they can take a step forward after a very disappointing last year.
Yeah, I remember Todd Downing, who was the OC there now, was OC in a disastrous season for the Raiders in 2017.
Oh, right. With
yeah, let's actually move on to the AFC West. Let's talk with Denver. I mean, is it just simple enough to say quarterback is their biggest weakness?
Yeah, I think so. You know, their skill position guys are fantastic. I mean, just really you love this skill position group between Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant, KJ Hamler's there. Deshaun Hamilton is is splashed at times. They added a couple bodies in the draft. And then Javonte Williams, who they traded up to get in the second round, leapfrogging a Miami team that was clearly going to draft him. He's a stud, man. And that doesn't even mention Melvin Gordon. So if you drop Aaron Rodgers into this offense, it's immediately a top 10 offense. And you'd have to cater your scheme to him a little bit and change some things up. But, you know, Pat Shurmur hadn't been a terrible OC, been a bad head coach, but not a terrible OC. I like the Broncos roster. If you did the Broncos even without Aaron Rodgers and tossed him in the AFC South, I'm picking them to win every 9 times out of 10.
I think that's fair. I think quarterback was the spot for me. I know right tackle, they did lose Juwan James. Looks like Dalton Risner might be moving to right tackle. I'm not sure yet, but that's suddenly a hole for them. Yeah. But deep on offense, I think deep on defense too. I think a top 10 roster, if it weren't for the fact that they have major questions at quarterback with Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater. But I absolutely agree. Kansas City, of course, they have invested quite a bit in their offensive line, if you haven't heard. I look at cornerback here as the biggest weakness.
I agree with you. I wrote down cornerback as well. And that's just sort of a thing. They've kind of approached it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, they have some real talent safety between Tyrann Mathieu and Daniel Sorensen, Juan Thornhill. They've got pass rush is a little bit of a concern for me too. I know you have, you know, Frank Clark there. And of course, Chris Jones provides interior pressure. So it's not quite as big a deal that they have, you know, another elite edge rusher. Taco Charlton has the pedigree and a fantastic fun name, but hadn't really as much. So there's plenty of talent on that defensive line. I don't worry about it too much, but if, you know, Frank Clark isn't really effective rushing off the edge, I think you can have questions about pass rush, but you know, nobody has any questions about the offense, right? I mean, the offensive line is completely reworked and looks awesome at this point. Mm-hmm. Obviously wide receiver and tight end are not a problem. So I think those would be the two spots I'd look. But I agree, cornerback probably the most glaring.
Yeah. I mean, they might just outscore everyone and cornerback might not matter. It might be what the situation for the.
Their formula for winning, Bill, seems to be kind of like the 06 Colts where, you know, you're going to play great. You're going to have a great offense for, you know, almost guaranteed barring, you know, major injuries. And then you kind of hope that your defense gets hot at the right time. And similar to how they won the title 2 years ago.
Yeah. Maybe your defense allows some points, but they might steal a takeaway or two a game. And that might be enough for them to win. Las Vegas Raiders did add a bunch on defense this year, but any spot you felt like they did not hit hard enough?
I mean, I just wrote the defense question mark. I mean, they got better.
That's not unfair.
Right. I mean, what's good on their defense? The thing about the Raiders to me that stood out more than anything, we have some with somebody the other day. I don't remember who it is. Maybe it was a post draft discussion, but you know, Mike Mayock was the only one doing the post draft interviews with the media, which is to me is John Gruden's shuffling of execution chairs. That makes sense.
It's interesting. A fair way to put it, I suppose. I mean, we don't know how much of this is Mayock, how much is Gruden. Mayock or Gruden certainly has some significant control about the roster here. And some of the questionable decisions they were making were in place before Mayock was in charge there. But, it's tough for me to say, like, linebacker. They did not get good linebacker play last year from Nick Kwiatkowski and Corey Littleton, but those guys are locked in. They're getting paid big money. So it's hard for me to call that a hole necessarily. I thought safety. They did draft Trevon Moehrig in the second round. They brought back Carl Joseph, a guy who they got rid of last year. So I don't know how that really works, but I felt like
wait, you know, do they have I'm trying to remember what year Carl Joseph was drafted, but it was recent.
He was a McKenzie first rounder in 2016.
That's right. Okay. So, but that means they've drafted a safety with a first or second round pick three times in the last 5 years. I mean,
yes,
that's a lot of
not ideal.
It's not ideal. I mean, you have Jonathan Abram as a first round pick and now Trayvon Morig, who's a
Trayvon Morig was a second.
Yeah, that's me, a first or second round pick. To be fair to the Raiders, everyone bashed the Alex Leatherwood pick, but as Ryan Wilson pointed out on our podcast, if you flipped Leatherwood and Morig and they took Morig in the first round and Leatherwood in the second, nobody complains.
That's true. That's fair.
You know, that's
it's just weird.
It is.
Just a weird process for the Raiders, but I think safety is the biggest concern there. The Chargers, a team always near and dear to our hearts, Will. What do you feel like they're missing?
I cannot believe I'm getting back on the Chargers bandwagon.
You can never leave the Chargers bandwagon.
It's just depressing because I'm out of here. We're getting divorced. See you later. And then just a year later, come crawling back. Wow.
Of course.
And you got in shape. You look fantastic. How are you? You know, the interesting thing about the Chargers the last 2 years, Bill, is at least I think it's interesting that going into the draft, Tom Telesco has left us a massive pile of breadcrumbs as to what his plan was in the first round. 2 years ago, it was Tyrod Taylor, Easton Stick, and somebody else on the roster after moving off of Phillip Rivers. And well, maybe they're just trying to trick us into believing that they want a quarterback. Mm-hmm. But they took a quarterback. And then this year it was Trey Pipkins at left tackle. Yeah, it's like, all right, they're not tricking us anymore. He's just going to take one of these tackles. And Rashawn Slater dropped into their lap. So I've been very impressed with how they've redone this offensive line, considering how bad things looked in the immediate initial portion of the offseason. And so that was very impressive. I can't find really any holes, maybe on the interior of the offensive line, if you want to poke it there. It's a pretty good roster. The one thing that I thought kind of concerned me, and maybe and it's a little weird because they have Joey Bosa, but the pass rush is a bit of a concern.
I was going to go.
Yeah. I mean, Bosa is one of the five best pass rushers in football when he's perfectly healthy, but he's missed plenty of games. And if he's not out there, you really don't have a ton of anything off the edge. It's kind of disturbing.
Yeah, it's Chetan Nwosu. It's Kyler Fackrell. I mean, this is a team that is crying out for Melvin Ingram to return.
Right.
Still a free agent out there. Not sure what his market has been. He's been pretty quiet. But I think that reunion would make total sense if they can get the price tags to work. Maybe on a one-year deal would certainly benefit both sides.
It's possible he's one of the guys that doesn't sign right away for comp pick purposes too, I would guess.
Yes. Yeah, that's also fair. But with the Chargers, he can come back and wouldn't matter. So that's the one. Maybe he's waiting for another team to develop. And if he doesn't get an offer he likes, he'll stay with the Chargers. Maybe he just hates the Chargers and is done with the organization one way or another.
Maybe he didn't want to go to OTAs.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I don't want to go to OTAs.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you're wealthy and don't need the money and you're going to sign for the same amount in June as you would in May, wait till June.
Hang out at home.
Yeah. Play with the kids. Play golf.
Yeah. Go play PS5. I would assume Melvin Ingram has a PS5. I don't see why he wouldn't have a PS5. Melvin, go play your PS5, hang out, and then sign with the Chargers. And then he'll step on Derwin James's foot, and then Derwin James will miss the entire season. And then we'll all be sad about the Chargers having gotten back on the Los Angeles Chargers bandwagon, a team that, on the other hand, has a very successful and thriving bandwagon, the Buffalo Bills, where I feel like they are one of the deepest teams in football.
This might be the best roster in football.
You can't rule it out. You could maybe pick another team, but they're certainly in that discussion top to bottom.
I mean, Patrick Mahomes is better than Josh Allen, and the weapons the Chiefs have on offense are much better than the guys that the Bills have in totality. But when you start to, if you factor in the defense and depth at every position and, you know, the floor of every position, I'm not sure there's a better one than I couldn't find really any weak spots for Buffalo when I was poking at this roster. In fact, I ultimately just threw down three question marks because what's the maybe pass rush? And the one thing that killed them last year was that they had a undersized defensive front. You know, Jerry Hughes, Mario Addison. I mean, you know, those can't be your top two guys. They have Star, Lotulelei, Vernon Butler, Ed Oliver on the interior. Harrison Phillips, a 2018 third rounder. In the last two years, they've added AJ Epenesa in the second round, Gregory Rousseau in the first round, and Carlos Basham in the second round. Basham and Rousseau are mammoth human beings.
Yeah.
Like, they are big dudes. And I really feel like that AJ Klein, AJ Klein, I clicked on the wrong guy. I was going to check Epenesa. I don't know why I did that.
All AJs are the same to me.
Right, but he's a big dude too. So they've added size at edge. And if one or two of those guys pop, they could really have a stout defense. And I like that they're gearing up for life after Jerry Hughes, which has to end at some point. And, you know, and once they stop bringing on Carolina Panther defensive rejects. So, but I mean, as a whole, I don't see a ton of flaws in this team.
Jerry Hughes was he on the 2006 Colts?
He may have been on the 2006.
No, he was drafted in 2010. So he was part of that era, but not quite on the 2006 team. I mean, they're going to beat you with depth, I think. You know, the Jerry Hughes is not the individual superstar. I think he slipped a little bit from his peak a couple of years ago, but still, this is a team that, you know, they can roll out 8 or 9 talented defensive linemen, especially now that they get Lotulelei back from his opt-out in 2020. The one position I said I'm at least a little concerned about, something they've brought up as a thing they might want to hit, is tight end, where Dawson Knox, inconsistent, dropped a bunch of passes, hasn't really been that sort of, you know, guy who can win one-on-one all that often. You know,
really just a red zone threat.
Yeah, he can get schemed open here and there, and he's a totally fine red zone threat. But they lose Lee Smith, who is their blocking tight end. They cut Tyler Croft, I believe. They have Tommy Sweeney, and they have Jacob Hollister, who they signed from the Seahawks. But I wonder if this is a, I talked about this a little bit with other people, I wonder if this is a spot for Zach Ertz, if Zach Ertz gets cut or traded by the Eagles.
Ooh, I like that fit. You could also, if you wanted to, and this goes back to Zach Ertz, but you know, you could nitpick the pass catchers a little bit. I mean, Stephon Diggs is an alpha and a superstar. Cole Beasley's awesome at what Cole Beasley does and is underrated, even given how well he plays. And then Gabe Davis has been a great burner, but you know, if something, and they added Emmanuel Sanders, but if something were to happen to Stephon Diggs, this group of pass catchers suddenly becomes a lot less explosive and dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think it's a
weak spot. I think it's probably a strength.
Right. But it's like Tennessee, where it becomes like,
correct,
oh God, who's going to get open? This is like that Browns Jets game where the Browns had all their receivers out for COVID and there was nobody for Baker Mayfield to throw to.
Right.
This does seem like it's not quite as intense of a situation if they did lose to one day. But I do think tight end would be a position that they might address if guys come available. The Dolphins, you know, major turnover again for the third consecutive year. Obviously a talented team, did not make a change at quarterback beyond adding Jacoby Brissett, which is a move I really liked as the backup to Tua Tagovailoa. Certainly addressed the offense in the draft, added some pieces on defense as well. But Will, is there a position you think they need to maybe look at in the months to come?
You know, we hate to do this because they're so fungible, but running back is certainly a problem for the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Miles Gaskin is a nice player, fun player, not necessarily a feature back. And then Malcolm Brown is kind of a plotter and can do some work around the goal line. But overall, I mean, they just don't have a ton of depth or talent at running back. And I understand it's 2021 and running backs are not that important, but you know, just because you can swap running backs in and out and they're replaceable doesn't mean that you still have to go get one in the second or third round to make, you know, to make them replaceable. And I can't imagine they feel that great about where they are in that spot. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to have Tua out there and you want to sort of simplify life for him as a quarterback, and you went and got him the weapons and Waddle and Will Fuller will be back after suspension, Devontae Parker underrated, but you know, you want to have a little bit of balance, I think, in terms of being able to run the football. And I'm not sure that this team has that.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think, okay, they can just plug somebody in, whether it's Patrick Laird or Salvon Ahmed, or they drafted Jared Doakes in the seventh round.
Seventh rounder out of Cincinnati. I'm not going to claim that the draft, Bill.
No, maybe okay, we just find the guy and we plug him in and it works. Maybe that'll happen. That's not out of the question. But there's always running backs available, and I think that's the tough part is that, you know, this is a position they could address pretty easily. Maybe they will as we get towards cut down. Guys are going to come free and, you know, they can plug and play a running back maybe. But I agree. I thought maybe off-ball linebacker could be in play as well, given, you know, Brian Flores does like his linebackers to do a lot. But I do think running back is the biggest weakness
there. And by the way, I mean, like, by all accounts, and they took Javon Holland with their 36th overall pick, which they got from Houston, the safety out of Oregon. Mm-hmm. By all accounts, it was almost transmitted across the league that Miami was taking Javonte Williams at 36.
Yes.
And if they go with him there, you feel a lot better about the offense. And I get it. You don't want to reach for a running back or just grab one just because the guy in front of you got missed. But I think it's at least a concerning, you know, if they can't run the football, it's going to make life tough for Tua. And regardless of how many wide receivers you draft.
Yeah. And I think their hope is that, you know, if we improve the offensive line, the running game will follow. Maybe it will.
Sure.
Maybe it won't. I think we certainly have to see. But I could certainly see them making another move at running back before the end of the offseason. Patriots, they made moves pretty much everywhere. Spent a ton of money. They got Mac Jones, traded up for Christian Barmore. Gave a back to the old Patriots, at least in terms of the roster depth, a much deeper roster than the one we saw in 2020. But is there something you feel like they don't have right now?
Yeah, they're weird because of how they operate with pass rush. You know, it's not a traditional, you're not going to see Bill Belichick roll out a, you know, typically roll out just a 4-3 and have, you know, two guys off the edge sprinting uphill. So I don't really worry quite as much about their defensive line, especially adding Barmore, who I think they'll get the most out of. I don't think Belichick trades up for him. If Nick Saban doesn't say, yeah, this is, you know, this guy was in my doghouse, but he figured it out. He turned it around. They, you know, they bring back Kyle Van Noy, the Hightower, McCourty coming back with all, you know, the opt-outs should help out that defense, which looks like on whole, the type of defense that Bill Belichick can turn into a top half of the league, top 10 unit, top five unit in terms of points allowed, regardless of how many yards it gives up, just they'll play well in the red zone. Mm-hmm. I just think wide receiver is still a problem. I mean, you get Kendrick Bourne and Nelson Agholor, and that's great. And you did address the position, but it's still Jacoby Myers and Keal Harry, Agholor and Bourne. And I don't, even with the two pass catchers at tight end in Johnny Smith and Hunter Henry, which I think is exciting, I just don't know that you see enough at wide receiver to believe that they're suddenly going to just challenge people vertically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I do think that's totally fair, and they're going to be better there than they were a year ago, but there isn't that primary guy. Maybe
this is simultaneously the best group of wide receivers Cam Newton's ever had and the worst group of wide receivers Mac Jones has ever had.
Yes. Like, Mac Jones is used to having, you know, top 10 picks up and down his receiving core. Now he has guys who are fine. Like Nelson Agholor has some upside. He was solid last year, had a bunch of drops, but otherwise a good year. Kendrick Bourne's fine. You know, Jacoby Myers was pretty effective as a slot guy. Maybe they get something out of N'Keal Harry. You know, I don't think they are counting on it, but maybe they do. But it just seems like that is a milquetoast group of receivers. It's not super exciting, but you know, I think for them it's going to be about depth. They're going to trust Mac Jones to find the open guy. Maybe he will, maybe he won't.
You said Mac Jones.
Yeah, I mean,
it's Mac.
I think it's Mac. I, you know, just how much they invested the first time pick in Mac Jones. The Cam deal is pretty small, all things considered. I think it might not be Mac at the start of the year, but it kind of feels like a situation where Cam gets hurt in a game, Mac Jones takes over, and then Mac Jones doesn't give the job back.
Mm. This sounds like, gosh, who was the other guy that played for the Patriots? It was like drafted late in 2000, and can't remember his name off the top of my head. Tom something. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about. Oh, Brady, Tom Brady. That's right. Yeah, took the job and never looked back. I don't know if that joke landed or not, but that was it, Tom Brady.
Oh, it did. I for a second, I was actually confused.
But then you're like,
who
is he talking about?
Yeah, what is?
It could be. And look, Cam, I was talking with Josh Norris on my podcast leading up to the draft, right after the draft. Excuse me. And Josh was saying how Josh has, you know, studied the Panthers, for very close to the Panthers, you know, and he's right. Like, you watch Cam Newton, and it's just not the same. It's not what it was. There's, whether it's just physical deterioration or, you know, maybe it was the COVID year. You'd like to believe it was that too, but I think you're right. I think there's a pretty good chance Mac Jones is starting for the Patriots by week four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's totally fair. New York Jets certainly added a bunch to help out Zach Wilson, their new quarterback. But do you think they did enough? Do you think there is a position that they need to address?
For the Jets, cornerback is very clear and obvious.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost to a fault, like, and sort of kind of a bit. But then two, if they are the team that's going to land Richard Sherman as one of those Melvin Ingram post comp pick deals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in theory, Sherman played for Robert Sala for years and loves the guy. If you added Richard Sherman and then you had Bryce Hall there, you could at least talk me into it being, you know, a viable unit if everybody stays healthy and the pass rush can, you know, can be, and Carl Austin can improve the pass rush that much and Quinnen Williams is back healthy. So, and by the way, Michael Carter on both sides of the ball, how fun is that? 32 and 30 should be a blast for them.
I don't like that at all. Just want to put that out there. I
hate it.
Now, when there was going to be Josh Allen on both sides of the ball for the Bills, I was into that because they were first round picks and I would keep them separate. Having two Michael Carters who were like mid round picks, kind of obscure, I don't
and
like
one went to UNC and one went to Duke. What are we doing? Feels like a gag. Like, what is this?
They got to fight the first day of training camp and then the winner has to, the loser has to change his name.
That's right. Marvin Carter. Carter. You lost. Your name is now Marvin Carter. You lost in a fist fight and you are Marvin Carter. You know, I like the Michael Carter running back pick in the fourth round. I think with P. Ryan and Coleman and Carter, you know, presumably Michael Floor is going to run the Kyle Shanahan system. So you don't need a, you know, a heavy investment in a running back. And there are other spots you can pick, but cornerback just looks like the very clear and obvious hole here.
I absolutely agree. Maybe they'll develop somebody. Certainly, I think Robert Saleh did a good job of, you know, getting the most out of the corners he had for most of his time in San Francisco. But I think definitely still a work in progress there for the New York Jets. Having Marcus May back will help. Good group of safeties, I think, there. But overall, definitely the question mark on that roster. Let's finish up here in the AFC North. Ravens, of course, did a bunch to help out Lamar Jackson. They went out and signed Sammy Watkins, then used a first-round pick on Rashad Bateman, got Tylan Wallace in the fourth round. Not really questions about wide receiver there, but something else you feel like they are not operating at full strength with?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to say wide receiver, that would be fine. I just think they like their guys and they've drafted their guys and they're okay with them. And they had another first round pick there. I sort of looked at safety and edge rusher.
I think edge was the one for me too.
Yeah, and I was kind of going back and forth on there. They've got the guys, I suppose, if you believe that they can develop, you know, Jalen Ferguson. I don't know. Edge doesn't pop for me. And I don't feel like their edge rushing was that. I guess they had Judon before.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. I know that sounds dumb, but it just doesn't pop. If all the old dudes, like if Wolf and Williams and Campbell are playing 100% of the snaps, then that's going to be not 100% of the snaps, but they play, you know, 16 games and rotate in however they end up rotating in. That's going to be a problem and allow guys to get open and probably improve pass rushing ability from lesser known names. But I don't think you look at this and think this is a team that's suddenly going to have, you know, multiple double digit sack guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think they are a sort of team where they're going to develop pressure from their blitzes. You know, I don't think they necessarily have that guy who's going to win one-on-one and just, you know, create 10 sacks just by being a beast. I think they're going to think, okay, we're going to create pressure with having a great secondary and then with our blitz packages. And, you know, they have developed guys like Judon in the past. You know, maybe that guy is on this roster. But certainly I feel like it is a, you know, a clear weak point on an otherwise.
Isn't Pernell McPhee one of those? Isn't Pernell McPhee like the Matthew Judon before he's Matthew Judon?
He was Matthew Judon before Matthew Judon, and then now he's Matthew Judon again.
They replaced Matthew Judon. They replaced Pernell McPhee with Matthew Judon, and now they're replacing Matthew Judon with Pernell McPhee. It's quite a...
Yes. It's all full circle in some ways in Baltimore.
And look, Don Martindale will generate pressure via a variety of blitz packages. So it's not like this team, again, like Belichick, and you know, it's not like they have to be loaded to the gills with pass rushers. They'll figure out a way to generate it and manufacture it.
That's fair. Cincinnati Bengals, a team that, of course, went out and got Ja'Marr Chase. Major questions, or at least major debate about whether they should have taken a tackle in the first round as opposed to Ja'Marr Chase. Of course, Penei Sewell was on the board. But overall, I mean, do you think that they have a spot they need to hit over the next few weeks?
Well, I don't know if they're going to hit it over the next few weeks, but I do think that offensive line should be a concern for them. Now, having said that, I said they should take Ja'Marr Chase. I had them taking Ja'Marr Chase because they were going to have to kick Penei Sewell inside or Riley Reiff inside, and that's, you know, a whole different. You know, you sign a veteran like that for it. Anyway, the machinations of it were such that I thought it made sense to get a second rounder who can play inside and then maybe move to tackle, depending on what Reiff does. But I still think just because of the, it's sort of a narrative pick. I think the offensive line could be a little bit better than people expect, but because they went Chase over Sewell, if Sewell looks good in Detroit and Joe Burrow is getting, you know, blitzkrieged into the ground, it is going to be a major talking point for this team and for Zach Taylor's future as the head coach. If it looks like Burrow could suffer sustained injuries, more injuries because of his offensive line.
I think that's fair. And I do think that having Ja'Marr Chase is going to help, because now Joe Burrow has a guy where he knows, hey, if I have pressure on me and I need to get rid of the ball quick, I have a guy who can win one-on-one. Yep. Might have more than one guy. Actually, Higgins might also be that guy as well. But, you know, I feel like he's very comfortable throwing up 50-50 balls to Ja'Marr Chase if he has to. So I think that's going to help out a little bit in terms of the pressure. I thought linebacker was the issue for me. I thought that, you know, adding Reef helps. I think there are a little better along the offensive line than people are giving them credit for. But I thought linebacker, just a position that they've been getting destroyed at for years. I mean, the Lamar Jackson play a couple of years ago was the perfect example of, you know, this is a team that just in the middle of the field really struggles with tackling, really struggles with, you know, keeping up in coverage. I think teams are going to be able to exploit that here in 2021, but the offense might be really good too. Two teams left here, Cleveland Browns. Again, one of the better teams in football in terms of the roster. I think a lot to like here, but Will, is there a spot you don't like at the moment?
For the Browns, I ended up going with linebacker, I believe. And I agree with you. This is one of the better rosters. How do we get here where the Bills and the Browns have two of the better rosters in professional football? It's quite a world.
What a time to be alive.
It really is. You know, and the offensive line is very good. They are wide receiver. I have some questions about, just because I'm not sure you want, like, do we trust Odell Beckham to come back and be healthy? It feels like pretty much everyone has sold all the stock on Odell Beckham. Talk about a great buy low opportunity with him. And then Jarvis Landry, I don't know, is a true number one. If you have your chips down in the postseason, and defensively added a lot of talent in the secondary, both, you know, whether it's through free agency with John Johnson or the draft with Greg Newsom, and they pretty good up front. Add Clowney and Myles Garrett. It's hard to find a hole right there. So I guess I will go linebacker.
Yeah, I thought maybe defensive tackle depth, just because they swap out Larry Ogunjobi and Sheldon Richardson for Malik Jackson. They get Andrew Billings back from an opt-out. A couple mid-round picks there. They signed Malik McDowell, the former Seahawks second-rounder who never played for them. But I do think that they've talked about maybe bringing Richardson back at a smaller deal. And I think they could add one more veteran. You know, I think with Clowney, it might be on the edge, because with Clowney, you know, he's fun to kick inside on passing downs. So maybe they add another edge rusher besides Tack McKinley and try and get Clowney as an interior rusher on third downs. But I think they maybe one more defensive line piece would be the one thing I would want if I were the Cleveland Browns. And last team here, Pittsburgh Steelers, major changes up and down the organization. What do you feel like they're missing right now?
I mean, clearly the offensive line is just...
I was trying to build up some suspense, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably better than we're giving it credit for, but they've lost... I mean, this is a vastly... One of the things, too, Bill, about last year, and I said this over and over and over again, and it ended up being true, and so I'm going to run it back to a smaller degree, a lesser degree in 2021, is that continuity matters. First of all, it matters in the NFL all the time.
Of course.
But in shortened off seasons and under the new CBA, continuity on the offensive line is kind of paramount. And the Steelers have had that for years and years and years, and now they have none of that, it feels like. So I am very worried about a aging, declining Ben Roethlisberger behind an offensive line that they just didn't feel like they needed to upgrade.
So, yeah.
You know,
I think that's the concern, right? Is if this were Russell Wilson, it'd be like, okay, well, he's just going to run his way out of trouble.
Right.
Ben Roethlisberger might be a literal statue at this point. That's the part that concerns me.
And the guy behind him is Mason Rudolph.
And I mean, like, you know, a couple of years ago, they had Mike Munchak as their offensive line coach. They did a great job of developing offensive linemen. That's not the case anymore. And I think there's major questions about, hey, can, you know, Chuck Okorafor be an NFL caliber left tackle? They drafted Dan Moore in the fourth round, brought in Joe Haig from the Bucks. I mean, you know, those guys, again, might be good depth, but the idea that we're going to have, you know, a very questionable left side of the line week one for Ben Roethlisberger scares me.
And they're doing it with the presumptive approach that Najee Harris is going to be a bell cow back who is kind of the feature of their offense while also utilizing employing a new offensive coordinator in Matt Canada. So there's a lot of, for Juju and Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson are back, and that is a really good, wide receiver core. But Eric Ebron's back too. They added Pat Freiermuth. But I mean, what's very bizarre, Bill, is that there's so much change on this offense in this, what we assume is the final year of Ben Roethlisberger's playing career. And so I know you don't, they were pretty good last year. I don't know, it's weird to blow it all up and say, let's make one more run with this bad new offensive line and new offensive coordinator, and let's go running back heavy.
It does seem strange to me. But hey, the Steelers have earned the benefit of the doubt in some ways. We will see. Maybe their offense will totally implode. Not like that's happened in the past few months or so. Will, we are out of time. But Will, you are a man who podcasts quite frequently. Where can people check out that podcast and everything you do?
People can check out the Pick Six podcast on Apple Pods, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever else you get your pods. I'm on Twitter at Will Brinson and Bill. I cannot say how proud enough I am of us for completing the entire AFC in the almost exactly the allotted time. Very nice.
We are very good at this. I think it's what it boils down to. We're just really good podcasters.
Expert podcasters.
That's not true. You are an excellent podcaster. I am just along for the ride. But Mr. Brinson, it's a pleasure.
Always fun, man.
All right. Thanks so much, as always, to my friend Will Brinson of CBS. One of the best people I love having on the show, certainly. A much requested guest and excellent, excellent podcaster. Check out the Pick Six podcast, of course, on CBS. We have more audio coming next week. We recap the AFC and the NFC. We will have more football on the way. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to discuss, but I promise we'll be back next week. So thanks so much for listening.